raise a couple more to the revolution.
We have only three words for you.
Uh-oh.
We're taking over!
The world is alive.
Why not raise a little hay?
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, to another edition of the Q-Zero Theater Cast. This is your host, Artistic Director Dan Pelletier, having our third chat with Blood Relations Director Brian. They just wrapped up another wonderful week of rehearsals, getting out of our weekly Sunday 5-hour marathon sessions that we have. And Brian, what has happened in the world of Blood Relations this week?
Hey there, thanks for having me. Today we ended up having our first kind of full stumble through. You know, usually we've been kind of going focusing on Act One or Act Two. We got through everything today for the first time, which feels kind of luxurious at this point.
It's a big mountain to cross,
yeah.
And where we're just over a month away, or just under a month. I don't know.
Yeah, it feels like we're way ahead of schedule.
Yeah. What sort of things did you discover in the stumble through of the show? Were there any big surprises or any, hopefully some sighs of relief that some things are coming together? Like what sort of things happened? Don't be afraid.
Yeah, a bit of a sigh of relief, because sort of the big tense moment at the end of Act One, looked better than it ever has, quite frankly. And I did not expect it to kind of flow that well, by this point. But the fact that it is, just makes me feel so excited, kind of, for what's coming in the next month.
Awesome. And what looks like the biggest hurdle now in the immediate?
In the immediate, probably just the folks getting lines down. We are kind of doing a little stopping and starting every now and then, and trying different things. And that's what I think I really encourage them for, is that we've got the time to do it. So to explore, and you really make a lot of discoveries when you just try something for the heck of it, and you realize, oh, hey, that kind of works. Or even if it doesn't work, it might give you a clue on how to try it again and in a different way. Sometimes those are just the most fun things to discover and explore.
Yeah, 100%. And, in the stumble through, as you said, the actors need to get their scripts out of their hands and whatnot. But do you have any specific techniques or methods you plan on using in the next couple of rehearsals? Maybe give us a peek into your directorial style.
Yeah. At the moment, I'm kind of going through and trying to notice where maybe certain beats should go in. I do like to do sort of a read through and go ahead and put a slash after a word where if I want a slight pause to go for just for the amount of just for as long as that is, there's our beat. So I say put a beat in or put two beats in if we want a slightly extended pause. Because sometimes those beats can say a lot, and those silences a lot, especially in a show like this, where it's what they're not saying and the awkward moments, are certainly interesting, rather than just being a moment of, oh, I think people forgot their lines. No, the awkwardness is there for a reason.
Yeah. Yeah, that's something I do so much with when I'm working with my students, as someone who teaches acting to teenagers, is don't plow through your silences. Use them. I mean, you're right. You can tell the difference between a I don't know what my line is pause and a meaningful silence of pregnancy. I do a whole lesson on it where I'll just be like, all right, I give somebody a scene. It's like, all right, your line is, do you love me? And then the amount of time I take to say to give my response says so much. So if you're like, do you love me? Yes. Okay, now let's try that again. Do you love me? Yes.
Ooh, that one's awkward.
Right, yeah. And I think that just 100% can illustrate how to use a silence to communicate something, whether it's, you shouldn't have to think about that, but you are, and getting inside the character's head. So
do you know any high school students that love the arts, either visual or performing? Maybe you are a teenager that's looking for a learning environment where you can get more individualized attention thanks to smaller class sizes? Well, do I have the place for you? The Arts Academy of New Hampshire. The Arts Academy of New Hampshire is a chartered public high school that is dedicated to fostering creative thinkers, active citizens, and independent learners through a curriculum that seamlessly integrates the arts and academics. We cater to a diverse range of students who seek to uncover the joy and transformative power of the arts, as well as those aspiring to pursue artistic endeavors in professional context. Our commitment to the arts is complemented by academic courses that instill a genuine and enduring desire for lifelong learning. Emphasizing real-world problem-solving, our students simultaneously cultivate cross-curricular skills through collaborative work in small groups. At the Arts Academy of New Hampshire, students engage in daily art classes and choose to study at least two disciplines from dance, music, theater, and visual arts. This personalized approach to learning creates an environment where individual talents can thrive, empowering students to dream and create each day. We are enrolling students year-round and highly recommend checking out one of our open houses, exhibitions of learning, or showcases to see what sort of things our students are creating. For more information, visit artsacademynh.org. That's artsacademynh.org.
When it comes to like your background in theater, are there any particular, you know, schools of thought that you lean into or theorists that you subscribe to that you'll be using?
In terms of like acting styles, I'm not a big fan of method acting. Mm-hmm. Since, you know, like I think my biggest complaint is just what method acting has come to mean in the modern day.
Yeah.
Because what we're talking about method acting is not the method acting that, you know, Stanislavski was talking about.
Right.
But I am a bit of a fan of biomechanics. I don't know if you're aware of that one.
I know of it.
Yeah.
I usually do a PowerPoint slide on it and then move on to something else that I'm more familiar with when I'm like, and these are other things you could study.
Yeah, well, one of the things that's kind of fascinating about it is that, well, the same production of The Seagull in 1898 that gave us method acting that blew Stanislavski onto the scene. In that same production was a gentleman, Veselvod Meyerhold, who was played Trigorin. Treplev, while Stanislavski was playing Trigorin. And he would then go on to create biomechanics, which is getting the same sort of end result as method acting was, but from the other way around. As in, if method acting is like an inside-out approach, figure out their meanings, their histories, and how does that affect their physicality, biomechanics is the other way. What's their physicality? How does that inform their inner world, their history, etc.? And just building from that into like commedia dell'arte and a lot more physical types of theater is kind of like what always kind of resonated more with me.
Interesting.
And I know with this, especially with kind of the concept that we're doing, is that I want people to really pay attention to their physicality, because everyone's playing essentially multiple characters. If they're standing still in silence, we should still be able to tell which character they are.
Right.
Are you being Lizzie Borden, or is he being an actress, or is it being, you know, the father as opposed to this other character? And really just by how they hold themselves, and that it's intended to be kind of a bit subtle in there, but I still want to be just apparent enough that people can tell maybe almost by instinct of,
right,
you know, of what character they are in that moment.
Yeah, that's so interesting, because I'm definitely someone that's, I'm also not a method person, but I am still in that Stanislavski, I'm more Meisner and things like that. So it is a slightly different approach. So, you know, when we're working with our, you know, community theater actors that all come from various level of experiences and backgrounds, without having to, you know, do a master class on Meyerhold, how do you bring that into the rehearsal room?
A lot of kind of early exercises about talking are dynamos. I've heard in previous productions we've called it something different here, but that's sort of like where your energy is coming from.
Uh-huh.
So as in like, you know, is he coming from the head? So they kind of lead with the head, and
they
lean forward, or where they puffing out their chest? Is that where their energy is coming from, or from their pelvis? You know,
right,
and they're walking around like they're sexy all the time.
Mm.
So that's I find that to be a good exercise to introduce people into the idea of it.
Yeah.
And I don't really have a need for it in this production, but sometimes I like to do mask work, like in terms of Commedia dell'arte. I'm hoping to acquire a 3D printer in the next 6 months or so, and I can finally make some Commedia dell'arte masks because my leather work is crap.
Somewhere buried in a box in this building is some Commedia masks.
Ooh.
Maybe we'll go on an adventure later.
Yeah, if that's something you want to do with your students and you want me to come in for, I'm happy to.
Oh no,
to
that'd
do
be
it.
Great. That's a blind spot in my background. I mean, I did recently read both editions of Great Acting Teachers and Their Methods, and it talked a lot about different types of mask work and the way that that's able to unlock elements of a performer's ability that, you know, the Stanislavski way of thinking isn't weighed about. And I'm a big proponent of give everybody tools and everyone kind of has to create their own acting technique.
Yeah.
I mean, not everyone has to go full Nicolas Cage. I don't know if you've ever heard about his, like, shaman approach to acting.
I have.
which just, the more I hear, the more I'm like, all right, Nick. You know, and sometimes Nicolas Cage gives phenomenal performances, and other times he's Nick Cage.
Yep. But I mean, this Commedia dell'arte, even into the modern day, you look at any sitcom and you can kind of see the templates from Commedia dell'arte. Mm. I mean, The Simpsons is filled with them. You know, Arlecchino is Bart. You know, Pedrolino is Homer. Pantalone is Mr. Burns. They're all in there, which I love. And when I went to undergraduate, which was at Plymouth State College, now University, we had a sort of a guest artist, Stefano Sullivan, and he's actually a gaming writer, writes RPGs for Steve Jackson games and such, and was and he was great, but he graduated from the dell'arte School of Physical Theater, so he would come in often to our classes, to theater classes, and talk a little bit about dell'arte, and he was just an absolute delight. And then when I went out to graduate school out in Humboldt State University, I found I was 15 minutes away from the dell'arte School of Physical Theater.
Wow.
So I got to see a whole bunch of shows from them over my time there, and just seeing their methods and their approach to it, and then kind of integrating that into my own education which was just fantastic. And I got to know some people that went there. A friend of mine from Plymouth State, I actually ran into out there completely randomly, and we're like, oh my God, you're out here. Where'd you come from? Where'd you come from? Ah.
Yeah. Oh, it's always wild. And there was, in those books that I was reading, I'm trying to remember who it was. I want to say it was someone from France that was determined to create new Commedia style archetypes and like spent like years trying to do it. And they could only come up with like one fresh new character. Cause there just are, you're right. Like there's just these archetypes that maybe they're in the, not to get like too highfalutin, but like just collective unconsciousness that they're like, well, they would start like really working on something and try to create something new and then be so far into the process and go, wait, no, we're just doing this one again.
Yeah. And that's what a lot of it was. I mean, there were hundreds of different characters over the couple centuries. But they didn't realize, these two are really just the same character, or these two are, a little too similar, and they start trimming them down until we got sort of, that nice little handful of about 15 of them that have been the ones that stood the test of time.
Right.
And I've thought about trying to, what are more modern, archetypes do, and a lot of them still end up being sort of just variations of the old ones.
Yeah. So, I mean, I know you said you're not doing a ton with it, but like, how could you apply this comedic physicality approach to acting to a much more serious piece?
Ooh, that's a good question. And that's kind of also difficult to answer because one of the other approaches that we're trying to do with this one is try to work in film acting.
Mm-hmm.
So as much as, there's going to be sort of where all the physicality is trying to be more subtle into it. But a lot of the performances, I kind of want to be in the faces and the eyes. So rather instead of, because we're such in a much smaller space, you don't have to entirely turn your entire body if you have to, face somebody. But, you can just turn your head a slight bit, more like in film where you have to act with your eyes is within there. So it's a lovely challenge to do that is to, use those physical sort of starting points, but still make sure that we're getting like a subtle performance and from them that hopefully hits hard and seems very realistic to the audience.
Yeah.
Hello, Q-Zero fans. Q-Zero business advisor and performer Jake Ranlett here, interrupting your regularly scheduled podcast to talk about Q-Zero sponsorship and membership. As I'm sure you know, theater is really expensive, and we cannot survive on ticket sales alone, which is why we have these two awesome programs that not only allow Q-Zero to continue to revolutionize the performing arts scene in New Hampshire, but has incredible benefits for you as well. Sponsors get their name and logo in our playbill, on our posters, mentioned in our podcasts, listed on our press releases, and so much more. We go out of our way to make sure everyone knows about you and thanks you for helping make Q-Zero possible. We also have our membership program for individuals who want a little bit more bang for their buck and a lot more Q-Zero in their lives. We have 10 different levels of membership, starting as low as $2 a month. Every level of membership comes with awesome perks, such as early access to the Q-Zero Theater Cast, discounts on tickets and merchandise, exclusive behind-the-scenes video content, the ability to read our new works blog, and so much more. The more you give, the more you get. If you want to be a vital part of the Q-Zero revolution, head on over to cztheater.com and click the Support CZT link to become a sponsor or a member today. And now, back to the podcast.
I think it can be a huge challenge, especially if you do have actors that are used to much larger spaces being able to rein it in. And then you have the opposite, where you have the challenges when you're working in a bigger space. Don't have to out anyone, but if we've been dealing with that in this show, and like, how do you go about like trying to get them to, give less? I want to say it's in Michael Caine's, he did like a book and like a BBC master class type thing.
Acting in film, I've got
yeah,
that book,
when,
yeah.
When he's like, do less, do less, do less. And I'm like, well, then I'm not doing anything at all. And he's like, well, now you get it.
Yes.
So how have you had to deal with that, you know, with people that might be used to giving, you know, acting to the last row when the last row is 200 feet away. Now the last row at like, I think the furthest you can be from an audience member in our space is 30 feet.
Yeah.
So yeah, have we had to deal with that so far?
Not so much. I'm like, I tried to be very straightforward with that approach from the beginning. I mean, a couple of folks are maybe going a little too far at times, you know, not to like a detrimental way or anything. But you know, as soon as I say, I love the energy to it and I love the instinct they have for it, but let's, you know, just try to make it more subtle. And everyone seems to kind of understand what I'm saying and, you know, they may forget that from occasionally, but that's the stage we're at.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's, you know, certainly not gonna, you know, knock anyone for it, because everyone's doing fantastic. I mean, like just today, cast especially our Miss Lizzie, you know, the scenes where she's not talking, but she's still there on stage age, the reaction, just the subtle reactions, looks, it's like draws me to her like almost every single time. And she's absolutely amazing. I find that like with most everyone, they're pulling it back enough so they're not kind of drawing focus away from it. But if you're almost like an Easter egg, if you want to look there, you're still seeing a lot.
Right.
And I love that.
That's such an important thing when you're working in this small of a space in a set that is going to be so minimal. Correct me if I'm wrong, like for the most part, there's going to be long chunks of not, like people aren't fully exiting, right? And you're not having a lot of blackouts and things like that. That changes the approach to things. Like we, with the drama club, did 12 Angry Jurors. And that was one of the first things I emphasized, was like, you enter at the top of the show and you exit at the end of the show. You are seen the entire time. So you have to be acting with your entire body for 90 straight minutes, other than, you know, you get intermission, but if you're, once the show starts, you're on stage.
Yeah.
Cool. So is there anything that you guys worked on that you'd like to highlight, or you know, a new selling point that might have come up as we, you know, wrap up our conversation today?
We've been working on some physical choreography. There are a couple of, you know, tense physical moments that, you know, we have to have, for lack of a better term, some stage combat. You know, it's not, we're not clanging with each other with swords like we were in the Scottish play or anything, but you know, for safety reasons, you know, we have concerns, and I want to obviously keep everything safe for everybody. In doing that, one of the things I've been working on, sort of on outside of it, is working on our axes. I just finished making sort of our silicone mold of an old looking axe that we're gonna be making our prop axes from. Nice. Because as a PSA, don't bring a live blade onto a stage.
No. Never. And when you can use fake things. I mean, there's so many horror stories of just anything and anything can go wrong. I mean, you hear all the time of Sweeney Todd's that, yeah, they're like, oh, well, we taped over the blade and you're still nicking people and things like that. So,
yeah. And I know it from experience. Yeah. I don't know if I've ever told you my story about Wojciech.
No.
For those who aren't familiar with the play Wojciech, it was written by George Buchner, who died when he was like 25, and they found this, you know, posthumously, this play of his, but it was just like 25 different scenes. No one knows what order they went in.
Hmm.
It's like a very confusing play like that. So every production that does it does their own sequence. And when I was in graduate school, we had a directing class, and our project was doing our own production of Wojciech. I was on the team that helped sequence it and sort of, you know, the playwrights telling the story. And then everyone got to direct a scene and, you know, and also act in it well. And, well, someone thought it was a great idea for the knife that was mentioned there to be an actual knife. I was on the group that said, hey, maybe that's not a great idea. But they said, oh, no, it's fine. It's fine. We've got totally control over it. It's great. During the one performance we had, it went about an inch into one guy's leg.
Oh, no.
It was, yeah, not a fun time. It was then quickly taken out and not used in the rest of the performance. Oh. And believe it or not, but yeah, that's the one I cite as I will not have any live blades kind of like on my set.
No,
And it's a little hard because in the play as it's written, at the end of the first act, the axe is supposed to like be thrown into a table. Well, I also don't want to damage a table at all, right, especially it's not going to be ours.
Yeah.
I am foregoing that stage direction, but in a way, I think we're doing it in a way that even makes a little more sense.
Yeah.
Because the implication is that that character that grabs the axe uses the axe, you know, moments later, which he can't really do if he just throws it right into a table.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it makes a great visual and a great sound, but then doesn't make sense for what's supposed to happen in the next 5 seconds, you know, as we're going into intermission. We're going hell with that. You know, we're going to do it in a more sensible way, you know, and a more safe way, you know, so it doesn't have to be a live blade, but hopefully it'll look live.
Yeah.
You know, because that's the beauty of silicone molding.
Yeah. We had that.
It's a lot of cool details in there.
We had that for 12 Angry Jurors where we had, padded the table with 2 inches of styrofoam that we put over it so we could jab the knife into the table. And at one point,
that's a clever way to do
it. Yeah, like, well, and at one point we were thinking, like, okay, if we're stabbing into the table, we'd have a real knife. And then when they go to stab someone with it, we swapped it for a fake one. We ended up just using the fake one because we were able to get the fake one to stay in the styrofoam. So it's a, you know, those switch combs, and we just painted it with a metallic paint, and I sawed off a little bit so it came to more of a point.
Nice.
Safety first, safety last, safety always.
Absolutely.
Excellent. All right, well, I love having these chats, Brian. Hopefully we can also get a performer or two on here real soon. And just want to remind everyone that Blood Relations runs March 1st through the 3rd at the Arts Academy of New Hampshire in Salem. Tickets on sale now at our website. You can also, if you're listening to this the week it comes out, we've got our Villains and Anti-Love Songs Cabaret coming up February 9th. We've got our improv workshop. We've got a million incredible things. We've started working on our murder mystery that's coming up in April. Interactive murder mystery that's kind of a joint venture and fundraiser between us and the Arts Academy. So make sure you're following us on all of your social media and our website. Thank you for chatting again, Brian.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, and I've been forgetting to do our sign-off on the last couple ones because, you know, it was rusty on our podcasting, but we want to
sign off? Awesome.
Yeah, we have a sign off. So I just want to first also thank all of our sponsors, supporters, our the Arts Academy of New Hampshire, who is our lead sponsor, our Patreon members, Cassandra Durand and Lori Pelletier. And as we always say, support local theater and join the revolution.